The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.
Good morning and welcome to the Successful Investing Radio Show with me, Jack Monteith, and my business partner, Ken Smith. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Jack.
Hey, this is a show that's going to help you build wealth, protect your wealth, and to enjoy the fruits of your success. Ken and I have a combined 40 years of experience in the financial world, and we're partners in the successful wealth management firm of Empirical Wealth Management. We're here to share with you sound investment and financial advice, the same investment philosophy that Warren Buffett recommends for most individual investors, the passive approach. Today, Ken and I will talk a little bit about a bear market, what it is, and also we've had several listeners ask us about, you know, what is it that we do in our wealth management business. And before we start with that, Ken, if you share with our listeners how they can contact us.
Sure, Jack, and I'd like to invite all of our listeners to give us a call at 1-800-923-4307. That's 1-800-923-4307. We'd love to sit down with you, invite you in for a no-obligation meeting where we can get to know you and understand your financial circumstances and put together a proposal for you and tell you a little bit about our services. You can also visit our website at empiriclewm.com, empiriclewm.com. And if you want to listen to past radio shows or see what's coming up, you can visit our radio website at successfulinvestingradio.com, all one word.
Ken, recently we've had several listeners ask, what exactly does Empirical Wealth Management do and what exactly do we do?
That's a great question that we love to talk about.
Well, Ken and I formed our business. We've been in business quite a while now. We're a wealth management firm, and what that really means is we help our clients determine what their investment goals are, what their human goals are, what their life values are. And life values could be, their desire to send their children through college or their desire to ultimately give back to the community. Or pass on assets to their heirs. We work with clients to design portfolios to most efficiently accomplish those goals, and whether they're financial goals or values in life. And primarily, the investment tools we use is the passive approach.
Right. And we've got a great guest coming up next week. John Nofsinger is a PhD and a professor. And he teaches about behavioral finance and the psychology of investing. And just got finished reading the most recent edition of his book. And, there's just so much that so many psychological biases and emotions and things that investors succumb to that make us hardwired to be poor investors. And a lot of our job is helping to negate those biases and keep people on track. And the studies show that individual investors out there trying to manage their own portfolio, they do a lot worse than they could. And one of the psychological biases that we have is this way of when we evaluate our own performance, studies showed that investors said they did much better than the market when actually they did much worse when the testers actually looked at the returns of investors. And so there's a lot of work that we do to keep a discipline and a structure to our clients' portfolios.
Ken, let's talk about what a typical client for us. And although we'd love to work with everyone, it's just not physically possible.
Right.
Generally, our clients have a minimum investable asset base of $1 million. Typically, some of our clients, are executives in even nationally traded companies. We have people that are getting close to retirement or into retirement. We'll manage their taxable accounts as well as their IRAs and 401k plans. Mm-hmm. You know, typically what we'll do is we'll build an allocation, like I said, that will match their investment goals and their with their you know, their life values and life life goals. And we'll use that passive approach. We have built over time a team of experts that we work with, both attorneys and CPAs and insurance folks. And these folks help us implement that wealth management process.
We want to bring the best tools to bear for our clients. You know,
right.
The best experts in all the different areas. We want to, and we look at the academic approach to investing, the science of investing. We marry that with the science of this behavioral finance, the mistakes that we're all prone to make. We want to eliminate those out of the portfolio. And then on the wealth management side, we want to look at all the other areas of potential risk and eliminate or try to reduce those. So things like having a proper estate plan that helps you to transfer your assets in a tax efficient way, in a manner in which you want those assets to be transferred. Asset protection, right, Jack?
Right,
asset about
protection,
insurance.
Right.
I mean, you could have a fantastic portfolio we could put together for you that's going to, you know, historically beat 90% of the active individual investors out there, but if you wind up getting sued or having a premature death without the proper coverages or protections, it really doesn't do much to have a great portfolio, right?
Right.
You're just building it up for someone else to take. So we look at all these other experts. We go outside of our own expertise when we don't have it to make sure that our clients get the best.
Our business is focused on matching risk management with returns. I mean, you know, most of our clients have built up a sizable portfolio, and you know, managing risk is as important as performance.
Well, Jack, you know, if we work with clients who typically have a liquid net worth of $1 million or more, maybe you could share why are we doing this radio show?
Well, really, the driving force, I think you and I have talked a lot about this, is just share the information and experience that we've built up and come to believe in the passive approach, and you know, even some of the wealth management and asset protection tools. We want to share that with everyone. So whether you have, you know, $5 million or you have $2,000 or you're just starting out, you know, we want to help you get started on the right foot. And we're absolutely passionate about the thought that, you know, the right foot is a passive approach, using indexes as your starting point and your accumulation method, instead of, you know, falling prey to all of the hype of the media out there and, you know, the various advisors that are out there that we believe are, you know, not necessarily taking the best approach.
Yeah, research has shown that with the advent of the financial networks like CNBC, which has only been around since 1989, and it's on a lot of people's televisions or during, you know, business hours, you walk by offices, you see CNBC, and now with the internet and all the blogs and the sites out there, the newsletters, what research has shown is that more people have gotten involved in the stock and bond market. The problem is their performance has actually gotten worse. So all this extra information and access to information has not translated into knowledge. We had author Larry Swedrow on recently, and he differentiates information from knowledge. And so, you know, when we were sitting back and you have the Jim Cramers and all these guys out here and these other advisors who are writing columns in magazines about how to actively time in and out of markets and how to, you know, get the next latest trend and buy gold now and all this nonsense, we really became frustrated with it. And we realized that most people probably don't get excited about hearing about the scientific approach to investing and what they should be doing. And we also realized that studies show that the less education a person has, there's a tendency for them to be less diversified and take advantage of their 401k and some of these other vehicles that are out there. So our goal with the show is to get out there, and this is our way of giving back to the community and trying to negate some of the 98% of the information, which is not very helpful, actually harms investors, and has been statistically proven to do so. We're trying to fight that battle. And one of the things we look at is how much money is invested in a passive. We talk about passive all the time, which just means buying a portfolio that participates in the market rather than trying to beat it all the time. And individual investors are still only 10 to 12% of them are incorporating passive investments, while big institutions are at 40%.
Right.
Now, go back to the 70s, and previous to the 70s, there were no passive retail vehicles that a person could buy. So if you think about it, nobody really had a passive portfolio per se using diversified index funds prior to that in any meaningful way. Institutions have realized, and studies on how institutions have made poor decisions themselves, these guys have the best money, the most money to go out and hire the best managers, right? And so they've now moved a significant portion and continue to do so, but the average person isn't getting that academic data.
You know, also, Ken, I mean, we really want to encourage and motivate people that up until this time have not started a savings plan. You know, so we want to, if we can just encourage just, you know, a few people, young people, or even older people that have not started yet. You know, we're encouraging our listeners, if you're an investor, go out and talk to, you know, your grandchildren or your children or your friend and, you know, help them get started, whether it's they're saving $25 a month or $200 a month. You know, it's that first step which is always the hardest. And get them started in a passive approach. You know, easiest thing, go out and buy a, you know, an S&P 500 index or an all-market type of an index and start participating in the, you know, the growth of the world economies that are surely coming. You know, the markets now are in a bear market, and Ken and I are going to talk a little bit about that.
Right.
But, you know, bear markets come and go, but the economies continue to grow and grind upward, and you need to participate in that.
That's right, and you know, you need to not allow yourself to be shaken by the daily news. And I think a lot of people get scared. They don't start investing because they feel like, well, now's not a good time. You know, there's always, and the media really loves to jump on this because they love to play into our emotions. We love to read stories. We like the doom and gloom, apparently, because that's what they report
right.
on all the time.
Right.
So they love the opportunity to talk about what the next major crisis is. And it's really a shame. I mean, I think it's a travesty in our society because it keeps a lot of people from having a good retirement. I mean, you know this. You've talked about some of the statistics. They're staggering how unprepared the vast majority of our population is for retirement.
Right.
And so you've got to ignore that stuff. And the bear markets, which let's roll into that discussion, Jack, but the bear markets are the reason for younger investors especially. That's exactly when you want to begin investing and do as much as you possibly can, because that's where the greatest returns are made. Returns are made in buying low, not buying high.
Right. So selfishly, if I'm a beginning investor, you know, I want to hope that the markets stay down for a long time so I can be adding money at a very cheap level.
Because markets have always historically, if we talk about broad context here, globally diversified, markets come back. And part of the reason why stock markets afford higher returns than buying treasury bills or CDs is because there's some short-term risk. There's volatility there. And in order to get a higher return, you have to take on that risk. But there are things that we can do to buck the trends or the traditional conventional wisdom of, instead of getting out of the market as it declines or when we're in one of these bear markets, you start buying. You rebalance your portfolio and allocate to the poor performing asset classes. So now stocks are the poor performing asset class. That's when you want to be buying and rebalancing towards them. Not trying to market time, but just systematically doing it.
Well, Ken, let's define what a bear market is. We're starting to hear a lot about that on the media. Technically, it's defined as a period of time where the stock market declines at least 20% from its high.
Right.
So I see the numbers now. We're officially in a bear market. I think the market's down about 21% from its high in October. Now, traditionally, I'm looking at the numbers. Since 1946, we've had nine bear markets where the market has declined at least 20%. And the average drop was actually 32.5%, lasting on average over 14 months. So average decline of 32% since 1946. We've had nine of those.
Right.
Can you imagine how much growth in the stock markets there's been since 1946 with nine official bear markets? It's staggering.
Yeah.
So it just tells us that you need to be in the market and you need to weather these things. And you need to, and that's what Ken and I do, and we continuously hound and work with our clients and work with, you know, our listeners. You know, you need the time to be preparing for the bear market is, you know, you're preparing for the next one. We should be preparing for the next one, whether it's 5 years or 6 years or 1 year from now. And you prepare that, prepare by designing a portfolio now that can withstand a bear market.
And how do we do that, Jay?
Well, you know, for lots of ways, but we'll go through a risk tolerance, risk capacity, and goals and values analysis. And then that helps us determine, you know, what the need for return is or what the need for safety is. And then we design that portfolio using a mixture of well-diversified indexes in the stock component, well-diversified, well by meaning worldwide diversified right. in bonds.
Right. So we're saying take advantage of a bear market. We're not saying everyone should be in 100% stock allocation. That is going to be dictated by your personal circumstances. And if you don't have a good way of figuring that out, you should talk to an advisor. Talk to somebody who does have a system of doing it.
You know, Ken, during these periods of time when we're officially in a bear market, you know, you hear on the media that, oh, now, or some of these investment guys, they say, well, now we're in a period where stock pickers will outperform the indexes.
Mm-hmm.
And that just slays me when they say that, because to me they're really capitulating to the superiority of the passive approach. Because if we know there was only 9 bear markets over the last 50 or 60 years and they only last 14 months, does that mean that the indexes will outperform the stock pickers the rest of the time?
Which that time, Jack, is funny. 70, if we looked at Treasury bills as an example versus the S&P 500, and we go back to 1926, 70% of the one-year periods, and you can create several hundred, almost 1,000 rolling one-year periods, I think there's 900 plus, by starting in January of 1926 and going 12 months and then February and continuing that process. 70% of those periods, the S&P 500 has outperformed or is outperforming treasuries. So that means that if you're an active manager and saying, well, the time to be a stock picker is in bear markets, they are admitting that 70% of the time,
right.
which probably adds up to the statistics, about 70 to 90%, depending on what area of the market, active managers as a whole, when you account for survivorship bias, all the expenses and taxes and things, they're underperforming the indices. So, you know, my view on that is it really doesn't matter if a few of them happen to do better than an index during a bear market. Most of us have a time horizon that exceeds the bear market. You know, the average bear market is what, 14 months?
14 months,
we were saying. So most of us have a time horizon that exceeds that. And again, the reason why you get paid expect a higher rate of return in an equity portfolio is because of these bear markets. So they are a function of making the market work to give you a higher rate of return. Without them, you won't get that. Personally, I want a higher return component. It's just making sure that your time horizon and the goals of when you need your money are appropriately structured so that if we go through one of these bear markets, it doesn't jeopardize the plan. It doesn't jeopardize your ability to capture those long-term returns that you deserve to get.
Well, Ken, that kind of segues into an interesting concept that a lot of people are not comfortable with or don't understand. And a lot of times during these bear market periods, you hear people or even commentators saying, well, get out of this sector or get into this sector or try to, you know, time this sector or that sector. And, you know, really our modern portfolio theory, and you're the investment executive in our company, our modern portfolio theory says that you need to be in all of the different asset classes, whether they're going up or down. And
right.
So trying to time which asset classes or market segments is a counterproductive choice.
It's a fruitless exercise. I mean, any of these guys out there, or girls for that matter, out there trying to convince investors to make changes in their portfolio as a result of what the current market condition is, you need to turn it off and ignore it. So, you know, the study after study has shown that there's no effective way to time in and out of the different sectors of the market. And so what we focus on is, what is a meaningful way to divide up the market? Mm-hmm. Large company, small company, growth, value. Those are more meaningful ways to look at what kind of portfolio can I construct for a certain level of return that I want to achieve with a certain amount of risk, and how do I combine that with my fixed income or bond components. But looking at sectors in terms of, we should be buying gold stocks versus biotechnology stocks versus financial stocks versus defense stocks and all that, you're basically transferring from investing into gambling. Right. You're walking out of the investment realm into the casino. And once you do that, casinos are not meant to be long-term winning strategies for the patrons, typically for the owners. I'd rather buy shares in a casino, and I'll buy them through a diversified index. I'm not going to overweight to them, but I'd rather own shares than be the person betting my life savings on being able to walk in there and beat the odds. And so we don't do it that way. And once you've defined those asset classes, what modern portfolio theory, as you mentioned, tells us is that we can then look at the relationship these asset classes have to one another, or what we call the correlation, mm-hmm. what academics call the correlation. And we can put them together in a way that focuses on, over the long term, minimizing risk and maximizing return. And a guy by the name of Harry Markowitz won a Nobel Prize and kind of was one of the major foundation layers of modern portfolio theory with this concept of building portfolios on an efficient frontier line. And you know, while we don't believe it's possible to do it with 100% accuracy, the concept of, hey, we can build portfolios that are diversified, they eliminate unrewarded or unpaid risk, is a very logical and reasonable, rational way to build a portfolio.
Well, Ken, our allocation has a segment that's allocated to commodities. And so now, in these types of period, with oil going to 150 but dropping off pretty swiftly now, you know, for the moment, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, now we're starting to hear comments from this analyst or that analyst, well, you know, you need to get out of commodities. It's a bubble. And then you, on the other hand, you hear some saying, well, oil's going to $200.
Right, right.
So maybe share with our listeners what our philosophy on getting in or out of an asset class.
Well, once you've identified the purpose of that asset class, you might make some minor adjustments based on valuations. And so if markets become irrational at times. And so for an example, if stocks right now are trading, I think that we looked at the forward PE ratio or price to earnings is about 12 times earnings on the S&P 500, right?
Which is very good.
That's very good. Historically, it's 15. It's been a long time since we've gotten below the historical average. At the peak of the market, at one point, I think the S&P was trading at 40 plus, 45, 47
right.
times earnings, right? It means very high valuation. And if you were going to make some adjustments in your portfolio, you might look at that, those fundamental valuations, and say, wow, maybe if I had a range in which I was going to be stocks to bonds or large companies like S&P that are growth-type companies versus value companies, you could make some when we build a capital market expectation of what the returns would, which what we believe they might be over a 10 or 20-year period, you could make some minor adjustments on that. Commodities are a little bit different in that there are no earnings multiples. Commodities are, on a day-to-day basis, completely supply and demand or speculation, the combination of those factors. So what we are going to, what we will do is we have a small amount, 5%. It's more of an insurance because of the nature of how low they are correlated to the stock market. When we do have bad stock and bond markets, commodities tend to do well. They also offer some insurance premium or risk protection there if we have a global shock, a 911 scenario. So we will systematically rebalance back to the target, but we're not going to be getting in and out of them based on day-to-day valuations because we don't know what's a reasonable valuation.
Well, Ken, before we leave, time flies. You know, we're almost to the end of the show again. If you can believe that. Can you share with our listeners again the contact information, how they can contact us with either questions or thoughts or complaints, whatever?
Yes, so they can call you at home for the complaints. And if you're interested in working with Empirical, give us a call at 1-800-923-9923. 1-800-923-4307. That's 1-800-923-4307. I think you'd be very impressed with our process. And again, we go through, we want to make sure that it's a good fit, so we don't sign every client we meet with. We go through a process of, we call it a discovery process of getting to know you. We put a proposal together, and then there's a mutual agreement as to whether there's a value add in working together.
Ken, we're just about out of time, so I want to remind our listeners to visit us same time, same place next week. Our guest expert will be author of The Psychology of Investing, John Nofsinger. And believe me, that's a must-listen interview. You just absolutely will, you'll enjoy it. So until then,
have a great morning.
Good morning.
The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.